This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson, who is the local host for All Things Considered, as well as a reporter, spoke with the Crown Point Mayor David Uran on Wednesday, November 14th. That was 2 days after he had learned that he had tested positive for COVID-19. He shares his experience and says that Uran says that he's doing everything he can do to keep himself safe and healthy during his bout with COVID. And here's the conversation.
This thing hit me like a ton of bricks on Sunday night. Didn't even think twice about it. And, you know, all of a sudden, it's just the fever, the chills, the body aches, the headache. I mean, it just came all at one time. I mean, from like 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, it was just like, what just happened? And never saw it coming. There was no indicators the day before, or, you know, like a runny nose or a cough or anything like that. It just like, it turned itself on. So, I mean, I never really got like a high temperature at all. I mean, the highest temperature was 99.6. So it was a very low grade, but enough to cause some body aches and some chills. And then as that Sunday night into Monday morning, that fever kind of broke early. And, ever since then, it's just been kind of just like you've been looking in a fog. You know, you're just kind of like tired a little bit and not motivated to do much. And, you know, and then yesterday afternoon, I lost my taste and smell a little bit. But I regained that a little bit back today. So each day, it seems like I'm getting better from the worst, which was Sunday night. So I'm very optimistic that this was just a mild case with it. I know that I'm feeling better from the initial onset, which, you know, there's cases that show that, you know, you can just continue to improve and get through it and be done, or there's rebounds in the middle of those, you know, 10 to 12 days that you typically hear the virus. And so by any stretch of means, do I think I'm different or out of the woods? It's just, I think you're right. There's been different strands that have been out there that are maybe not as strong as what initially came out in over the summer or the last month or two. So
what day are you on?
Well, I guess if you look at it, if you count Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so I'm only like, you know, 3.5 days into this. So that's why I'm optimistic, but I'm not getting where, you know, I'm thinking, hey, by Friday, you know, it's a miracle, I'll be fine and life's good again. So I'm very precautious. I've been taking a lot of, vitamin C, vitamin D, taking zinc, you know, stuff that you want you to really get your immune system to be stronger, you know, fight any upper respiratory, situations, stuff like that, and just resting. They say believe it or not, they say the key is the rest.
That's it. And I would say, and lots of fluids, exactly. I was just going to say, maybe, your wife or somebody can go out and get you some G2, some Gatorade.
Yep, that's what I'm drinking, Gatorade. Sugar-free. If I start concentrating, because I'm operating off my phone, or I have a laptop, so I'm still trying to stay active in everyday activities. And, you know, I'll get quickly, by reading the screen or something like that, I'll get tired quickly. I mean, it's my body, my mind's like, hey, listen, I need to shut down for a while here.
So what symptoms, I mean, you got the brain fog. What other symptoms are you experiencing?
It's a dry cough, just a nagging dry cough. I had a runny nose the first day or two, but that's gone. Like I said, the fever's gone. The body aches are gone. And it's just more of just, you know, the chest is a little tight, but that's just because, you know, I've been coughing. You know, when I first got this, I was like, every time you moved or sit up, you coughed, right? You're just really expanding those lungs and trying to gasp for, not gasp for air, I should say, but, just you're overworking your internal side a little bit more because of the heavy cough, you know. And I think the heavy cough is also causing a little bit of headache, too, because you cough so hard.
Are you doing deep breathing?
Yeah. We got one of those beds that you can raise the tops and feet, so I've got myself raised up, so my chest is not, like, being compressed when I sleep at night, so that allows it. So when I relax, and I'm kind of sitting up, too, so fluids don't just sit on their chest.
Did you ever figure out how you got it?
No, that's the whole thing. We sent in some people that I had close contact with in the last 72 hours from Sunday, I worked my way backwards, and knock on wood, they've all come back negative at this point. Even my house, my son was home on the weekend, and my wife, she got tested, and they're negative. You know, I wasn't feeling anything on Sunday. My son was home from school, and he lives in a dorm down in Marion, and he left, and then that night I'm like, I don't feel good. So I called our task force, which is, we got some people here set up in the city that are our fire chief leads and stuff like that, and I was telling them that I had, and obviously they sent me up for the test the next morning at Great Lakes over in Porter County. So I let him, my son, know that, hey, listen, you need to quarantine yourself in his dorm. He lives by himself in a dorm, which made it real easy. He's already went through that one time with some football players he plays with down there with that, you know, had a scenario where they had a small outbreak in, at Marion. And so he understood what to do, but he came home and we kept him isolated away from anybody in our house, and he got tested and he came back negative. So I was, you know, you start to think about, okay, I'm doing the right thing by contacting everybody that I think I was associated with that came down or had a possibility to be exposed to this. At this point, nobody's come to me and said, hey, listen, over the last 2 weeks, I've come down with COVID, and I go, well, that's probably there's my missing, you know, weakest link, right? That was my exposure. So I don't have that. So it's unknown where this, I picked it up from. That's what's frustrating, because I'm pretty good with wearing a mask, always washing my hands. I carry sanitizer in my car, so anytime I go from an event, you know, I'm always wearing my mask. I wash my hands afterwards, and, you know, I try to stay 6 feet away and social distance and all that stuff. And so I've been real diligent with that part. So that was, I've got some people, you know, my staff looks at me, because I'm the one that's always on them to tell them, hey, wear the mask. You know, I'm like the mask police sometimes, which mm-hmm. is good. And I'm the one that comes down with it. And I'm like, I was probably the most strongest one in our circle to make sure you're trying not to have it, because I'm in contact with more people than most of my staff is. So I really protect myself, and I end up getting it.
Right. You could have got it at the gas pump, for all you know.
And I wipe my hands, you know, before, after. But you don't know. I mean, and I've been, you know, I'm probably one of the worst guys in the world that when it comes to always fidgeting around. I don't wear glasses, but I wear reading glasses. So I'm always fidgeting with glasses all the time. I can't read stuff on my phone, so I have to put glasses back on and forth. So I'm always having my hands around my face, right? Who knows if I've, you know, it just takes one little spot of exposure, and that's it. You know, that's how contagious this thing is. Everyone's experienced flu before and other, you know, small viruses and stuff like that. Not to say that, you know, you can immediately tell the difference, but I knew on Sunday night something was wrong. I mean, this wasn't a, oh boy, I thought I just came down with a touch of, you know, whatever, you know, you just caught something, you know, and you don't feel good. You need to shut your body down for maybe an hour or two. It just, I mean, it took a two whacks at me, you know, and it's like, wow, I was out, wasn't feeling good. And so when I went to get that test, in my mind, I'm like, man, I just think you just kind of think in your mind you're positive. I mean, because what else could it be? I've never experienced anything like this before. And when the results came back, I wasn't surprised. I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. I just feel for everybody else that is going through this. Like I said, I had a lot of people reach out to me that have gone through it, and, you know, give a lot of encouragement. Hey, listen, you know, the regimen of, you know, continuing to have your vitamin C's, your vitamin D, your zinc, and, you know, take, you know, as much as you can, drink, stay hydrated and stuff like that. And so, I mean, seems like that's the typical regimen to put into your system so you can have a stronger immune system. And I generally work out and stay active. So, you know, I'm hoping that's playing a bigger part of the ability to recover from it quicker than some stories you hear out there that unfortunately don't come out as promising as others. So you just got to let everybody know that, I mean, stay diligent in your daily activities and just keep it, you know, wear the mask. You know, there's a rule of thumb out there. People think that the mask don't work. I mean, they show scientific data that at least it gives you a fighting chance, you know, and people need to continue to. I know that the governor today just came out with some more information that, you know, phase five is no longer considered a phase, and they're going to be reevaluating how they move forward and stuff like that. So, the next month or two is going to be difficult, but obviously there's good news on the horizon with some announcements of the Pfizer and Eli Lilly coming out with some of the things they've got on the table now, and we just got to be able to roll that out there in an efficient manner, and hopefully the combination of the two, where this is going to be maybe the strongest when the virus could hit the most people, will have the ability to, one, have a therapeutic, something, the vaccine to prevent it, or a therapeutic that can help you get over it quicker.
So your advice to people would be to keep wearing the masks, and what else?
Well, you got to continue to wear the mask. You still got to, you know, watch your social distancing. You still got to wash your hands and just be diligent on the large gatherings you have, you know, and you just got to, you know, take the precautions. I took the precautions. I ended up still getting it. But if I didn't do the things I was doing, maybe I would have got it much sooner. I mean, so the exposure and again, continue to live your daily lifestyle, work out, eat more healthier, improve your immune system. So if you do come across that, you can fight it and have a better chance of having a positive conversation between, hopefully, one, it's somebody like yourself who's had it and got through it, and somebody that's in it and looking at the end of it, hopefully get out of it, and we'll have more of these conversations versus the alternative.
Have you gotten any offers to take part in any clinical trials?
No. I mean, I guess I'm still in what's considered the honeymoon phase of this, so there's no honeymoon by any stretch of means, but it's, it's so early into it, I have not. But if there's anything that I can do through my experience or share my results or participate in something that can help provide a different outlook on this, I'm more willing to be someone that's out there. I think as we get through this, and, they say once you have it, like Sharon, you're technically maybe going to be immune to this or immune to the strands that are out there for at least 3 months. They're saying it's new data every day that gets developed, but you'll have some fighting immunity out there that maybe the ones such as ourselves that come through it and we're okay. If we can help other areas that are people that are in time of need, I know the hospitals are getting inundated with first responders, but there's other things that maybe we can do as post victims of the coronavirus that we can help out in other ways. That way we're not feeling like we're endangering ourselves, but we're helping other people. I mean, I think that's going to be a big part of the ongoing as we get through the next couple of months, is the more people who can help out in those areas will be looked upon as even important essential workers as well.
So you would participate then if you got any offers to be in any trials?
Well, I mean, we'll see what it is. I mean, if they want to, take my blood, do different things like that. Yeah, I mean, it depends what it is. I mean, I'm not going to dive into something that has no background to be the first one in.
Sure.
But I think the things that are coming out that, you really got to trust our scientific technology professionals today. I mean, where they're at today, where they were 20, 30, 50, 60 years ago, it's tremendous. So you got to think that things are putting out there are going to be more likely to help us than be bad.
So what's the biggest thing going on in Crown Point right now?
Well, we had our Veterans Day ceremony this morning. Unfortunately, I wasn't there, but I was able to watch it on Facebook Live, and it looked like that was a nice event honoring our veterans today. And we want to say, thank you to all our veterans who have served in our military branches and ones that are currently still serving. It looks like they're going to be very busy over the next few months here, when and if a vaccine gets here on our homeland. They're going to be involved with that. But we want to say thank you for their service. And I also want to say, a tremendous respect to all our essential workers out there. That's a lot of different people out there. You've got from our first responders to the medical field. The hospitals are just getting inundated now. I mean, we have conversations all the time with the medical profession out there. They're getting full. So our thoughts go to them and keeping them safe and keeping them. It's a tireless event because it's like Groundhog Day for those people every day. Mm-hmm. They're seeing. And everybody else who's involved in providing services every day, our grocery store workers, our employees here in the city, our public works people are out there helping our community out. Just be careful out there and be vigilant, just wear that mask and respect the space around you.
So are you going to go to the doctor? Are you, now that you know you have it, are you going to follow up with your doctor? And
well, we've got a pretty good program here. I mean, as long as I'm not showing any anything that's causing an alarm, right now I'm progressing where I feel like the virus is taking its course. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put any burden on our healthcare professions. We have a good working relationship with the city, with Franciscan Health, and we work with our clinic down at Franciscan, and we have Teladoc, so we're able to talk to our nurse practitioner directly on the phone, and she's been great with our employees, so she'll follow up. We have a task force in the city with our employees, and we're in direct communication with the healthcare professionals, and she'll reach out to you via text, or if you have any direct questions, you can contact her directly over the phone. And they guide us through these. And we've got employees that have it now, and they've came out on the other side, like yourself. They've had it, and now they're negative. And we test our employees, so we know it on the matrix. We have the full Quadistat testing from Great Lakes, so it gives us a complete panel. So if you're not feeling well, you'll get a test. And we'll know what's going on with you. If it's not coronavirus, we'll know if it's something else. We'll know if it's the flu or if it's a common cold or anything like that. So that employee knows exactly how to navigate what's currently going on there. But if they are positive, we'll know the matrix. Obviously, the lower the number of the coronavirus, the earlier stages you're into it, and the higher the number is, because you want to give above that 34, which means you're not contagious anymore. You're not going to viral shred and pass it on to somebody else. It's based on all the things we got from John Hopkins and stuff like that. So we'll know exactly where we're at, each employee. So when we do return to work, we know that we're not putting somebody back in the workforce that's going to be spreading the virus. So, usually about 7 to 10 days, depending on your feeling. You can come back and get a follow-up test, and we'll know where you're at. When I had my test done on Monday, I was at 15.8. So that was, you know, 11 is usually the lowest it is as far as severity, as of what we've been told. So mine's kind of like right in that. I wouldn't say it's a significant alarming number, but it's kind of like a mild case, to right there in the middle. And hopefully next week sometime I'll be near 34, 35, and I'll be putting this past me.
That's Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson speaking with Crown Point Mayor David Uran. That was recorded on November 11th. That was 2 days after that Mayor Uran had learned that he had tested positive for COVID-19. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday. So let's find out from some of the reporters here in the region and on the stories that they are working on and have out there in print and online. Hannah Reed is one of them with the Post Review, and she's been doing a lot of education-related stories lately, and they've also been tied to the pandemic. And Hannah, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you again for having me.
Well, once again, we mentioned just now that the fact that it's the COVID-19 pandemic and causing more changes with the rise in cases and infections and the like to students as well as staff members at schools around the region. Fill us in on the stories that you've covered on.
Yeah, so I guess what we're seeing right now is that a lot of school districts throughout North Louisiana have announced a change in plans for the upcoming weeks. A few of them are saying they're going to move online for a couple weeks. A few of them are saying they're going to move online until January. Some who are online are continuing with online. And a lot of that has to do with both the positivity rates in the counties as well as, you know, staff members mm-hmm. in the districts being out on quarantine and them not having enough people to, I guess, run the schools.
Okay. Tell us first here about Merivale Schools. What's the status with them right now?
Yeah, so Merivale announced that they would have students stay with their virtual learning until January 2021 instead of returning to in-person instruction. And so what happened with them was that the superintendent had recommended that they provide in-person learning for the second trimester. And at the time that he, you know, recommended that, the unique positivity rate was about 10%. And since then, it's obviously gone up. So they announced that they would be, you know, staying with the virtual program until January 4th.
I know that a lot of the school districts are doing the best they possibly can to deal with this pandemic, and it's just been overwhelming, to be sure. And I'm sure that the school boards, not only the Merivale school boards, but all the others here in the region have had to make some tough decisions. I would imagine, and you've covered it in your stories as well, too, talking about how things have changed so drastically and all of a sudden. For example, with Merivale, what are they doing as far as trying to plan? Because they're going to probably have more exposure over the holidays coming up.
Yeah, so what they were doing for the holidays, and this is what a lot of districts are doing, they're waiting until after the holiday season just in case, you know, students or faculty or staff travel or see family, and so they have a little bit of time to quarantine before they return to in-person learning. And the issue with a lot of the districts as well is that they want to say that they're going to have, you know, this exact, you know, we're going to come back in person, but it's hard to tell at this moment. So a lot of districts are just saying, you know, it's going to be very fluid. We're going to let the families know as we get more information. But for November and December with the holiday breaks, the main concern was that, you know, there would be increased staff quarantine issues that would impact the ability for the district to provide in-person learning.
One of the other stories that you had out there that's related to all this is what's happening in the Crown Point Community Schools. Bring us up to date with them, please.
Yeah, so Crown Point, they started their school year in a hybrid model, and then they switched to in-person last month, and they just switched back to online. So they went from hybrid to in-person to fully online, and that was also because of, you know, the amount of cases that were happening in Lake County and the positivity rates that were going up and the amount of individuals they had quarantined. And so they announced that on November 9th, I believe, or November 6th, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. They announced that on November 6th that they would return to online learning.
Have we found that there were probably more cases that may have popped up that have affected the high school and the middle school students than elementary, or has it all been about pretty much equal across the board in the school district? They seem to be dealing with the same problems, it sounds like, since they had to make the district-wide decision. Were more students doing well, I guess, in person than now have to switch back?
Yeah, so what it is with Crown Point, their quarantine numbers, they have a impact data chart on their website. And they did have a majority of the quarantines were from the high school. The reason that the high school will return to online before the elementary school is just to allow those people, the elementary school students, families more time to figure out how they're going to figure out childcare, and it gives the staff more time to figure out how the, like, to teach the elementary school students how to use their computers, how to do the online learning, just to prepare them a little bit for that virtual learning in case it has to stretch for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. One of the other stories that you had in print and online involving school districts and the pandemic is with the Lake Central School Board, and they were trying to make some plans beyond this current semester, for next year, too.
Yeah, Lake Central, they're looking to start getting, you know, the choice from the families pretty soon on whether their children will do in-person or online learning, and that they need to know early on just so they can create the schedules just to keep, you know, try to keep the younger children with their same teacher and try to keep the classroom sizes at the proper amount that they would want them to be.
I know that Superintendent Larry Verocco has some very definite ideas about this. He obviously has to deal with the pandemic in general and how it affects the school district. But I know he wanted to really have the students come back into schools if they possibly could, if I understand.
Yeah. A lot of the superintendents have said that they, you know, they all agree that they believe in-person education would be the best if it's possible. Although they are, you know, Verocco has said multiple times, you know, if, you know, the Lake County Health Department or someone else tells him that it's probably not a good idea to, you know, have these students in the classrooms, and he will honor that and talk to the school board and hopefully, you know, do what would be best for the students and the faculty and the staff and their health and their safety.
Now, we've heard about the Lake Central, the Merrillville, and the Crown Point school districts. Hannah Reed, are there any others out there in the stories that you're working on or have worked on that have given updates on how they're dealing with the pandemic and changes that they have to make?
Yeah, earlier this week, Doolin School Corporation actually announced that they would also be transitioning to remote learning over the next 2 weeks, and it would continue that way until January. And Highland did the same, and there are about, I believe there are 12 school districts at the moment that have announced a change in plans that I know of regarding the fact that they will be moving online or continue with online learning just as a precaution based on the, you know, the staff numbers who are quarantined and the amount of cases that are happening in Lake County and Porter County.
Hannah Reed is a reporter for the Post Tribune. She's been covering a lot of education-related stories and all related, seems to be, to the pandemic. Thank you very much, Hannah, for being with us, and we'll hope to check back in with you soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte, and on this Reporters Roundtable Thursday, let's talk to Joseph Pete. He's the business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana, and I'm sure you're firmly ensconced in either at home or in your office chair right now, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we've been working remotely for a while, though.
Well, that's what I thought. A lot of work can be done remotely here, and rather than have to sit in the newsroom and do it, sometimes I guess it's the only way you can do it sometimes. One of the stories, first off, a recent story that has come out that we should know about is the latest with BP, their financial issues, and how apparently, at least for now, we know there are some Chicago layoffs that are ahead, and maybe some here in Northwest Indiana, too.
Yes, the company announced that it had filed a notice, a WAR notice, with the state of Illinois and with the city of Chicago, saying it anticipated laying off at least 250 people at its Chicago operations. It has corporate offices there. Its headquarters in the U.S. is in Houston. It's, of course, a London-based company, but it has substantial operations and labs and so forth in Chicago, where, you know, it's also a big corporate sponsor of things like that. A pedestrian bridge that goes between the Millennium Park and the Maggie Daly Park by the Art Institute. They had paid for that. But they are also, they are looking at, they have warned they're looking at potential, like, you know, reorganization layoffs at the Whiting, Indiana oil refinery, but they're not saying how many. Hopefully it's fewer than that doesn't rise to the level of a mass layoff, and it's fewer than 250. The employment there has been shrinking, unfortunately. They were just in the last round of contract negotiations. They were at 1,850 employees there a couple years ago, and now they're down to about 1,700. But the company is in, they're suffering, they're in kind of two positions. The oil has obviously been a very insanely lucrative business over the years, but the two issues that they're facing is, one, they are, you know, with the looming threat of climate change, they're looking to become carbon neutral by 2050, and they've been investing a lot in, like, wind farms and other alternative forms of energy generation, and they're looking to diversify and modernize their portfolio and so on. And then they are also, the crude oil prices and gas prices have been depressed for a while now, particularly during the coronavirus pandemic when fewer people are on the road and driving. You know, if you look around, gas has been around $2 a gallon for some time now. They have not turned a profit in five straight quarters. They lost a staggering, this was largely because of, like, write-offs, but they lost almost $17 billion in the second quarter, and then another $4 billion when oil, at one point crude oil is below like $0 a barrel. You could literally store it in your garage.
Yeah.
It was a joke, but, like, you know, not, well, not literally. But and then they lost $450 million in the most recent quarter. So they've had, the CEO has been targeting 10,000 cuts to 10,000 workers worldwide mostly by the end of the year. They tried to achieve most of it with buyouts, but my understanding is not a lot of people have been taking the buyouts. Obviously, there's a pandemic and a lot of job insecurity and everything. So, unfortunately, they've been looking at layoffs, and it looks like there's going to be significant bloodletting in Chicago, and hopefully, we don't know the exact numbers yet. I reached out to the Illinois to provide they couldn't turn over the paperwork yet to specify like exactly what they're looking at, but hopefully it's minimal here in Whiting. They, you know, they do need to have a certain level of staffing to maintain safe operations at the refinery. They do have a ton of contractors on site at any given time, but we are talking obviously about, you know, highly flammable and explosive substances, and you need, you know, skilled, trained union professionals to be able to maintain that.
Now, I know you mentioned in your story about the fact that the company has been talking with the Whiting Refinery Union, Steelworkers Local 7-1, and I know you've been reaching out to them to find out anything new. Have you heard yet from them as to if they've got
any
clue?
No, I don't have any updates from them, unfortunately. They have been in talks with them for a while now. Any cuts would have to be either approved or cleared. I still have to review the most recent contract, but usually with these contracts, there is provisions that if, you know, the downturn is bad enough, the companies can make cuts, but something has to be agreed to with the union. And they've been in talks, with them, but I'm still trying to get an update from the union on where that stands. I don't know. Obviously they would be trying to preserve as many jobs as possible. BP was saying, like, you know, they're trying to avoid, like, the downstream ones and operations like the refineries, like, kind of minimize the impact there. They're looking more at, like, the upstream oil exploration and the office jobs and that type of thing, because they also do fuel marketing. They also run lines of gas stations and everything. So hopefully the impact on the refinery operations is minimal.
And I know you have a couple other stories involving the pandemic in different angles. One in particular is some changes that have had to happen at the Four Winds Casino over in New Buffalo, Michigan. And the other is also talking about, whether Santa is going to have a cushy spot to sit at the mall. Tell us first off about Four Winds Casino.
Yes, the Four Winds Casino has been back when the pandemic started, it had initially closed its closed period. And then it reopened in June. And at the time, since then it's been restricted to 21 years and older. So it closed, you know, it bills itself as a casino and a resort. You know, it serves the target market from a pretty, you know, people, you know, New Buffalo is a resort town. People go out there to go to the beach, maybe go to the casino, you know, eat at Red Max, whatever. It's there's a nice state park just north of there. You know, people go there to get out of town. You have a lot of Chicagoans visiting there. They draw from a pretty wide area. So unlike other casinos, this one happened to have Kids Quest, which is a play place for kids between 6 weeks and 12 years old. Because the idea, people might go there for a weekend with their family. And CyberQuest Arcade, which is specialized in kind of nonviolent arcade games with the chance to win prizes. And those were not, they did not reopen when the casino did back in June because it was restricted under Michigan's laws to be 21 and over. And then this is a national company. They're chains with locations, like something like 20 locations in 12 different states. But now they are closing permanently at the Four Winds casino in New Buffalo. They haven't been able to, you know, reopen, and they haven't had any revenue coming in, and they've just decided they're going to phase it out.
One, then the other story I was asked about here is the one about Santa coming to South Lake Mall. We'll see some changes because of the pandemic about that, won't we?
Absolutely, yes. No one's Santa's here to determine whether, you know, you've been naughty or nice this year, but you're not going to be able to sit on his lap, and you're not going to be able to sit next to him. They're doing a socially distanced Santa thing in the hope of, you know, trying to maintain some sense of normalcy through the pandemic, but taking precautions. They're doing, you know, everybody, the mask, Santa, the kid, the parent, everybody has to wear masks in this situation. And then, you know, the kids are going to be 6 feet away, including for the photos. You know, normally they have like a bench that they, you know, kids come by, sit next to Santa, tell them what they want for Christmas this year. But it's there's going to be the social distancing. And then the mall is going to be doing cleaning of the area in between every visit. So the line might take a little bit longer than normal. And then for people, for families and kids who don't feel comfortable, you know, going to see Santa in person at the mall this year, the South Lake Mall will be offering Zoom video calls with Santa, which you can find out details about at shoppingsouthlakemall.com. But you can go there and get a personalized Zoom video call so that your kids can at least see Santa on the laptop this year.
We're talking with Joe Pete, who's a reporter and does the business beat for the Times of Northwest Indiana, about his stories that are in print and online out there. And one of the other stories, a big story, talking about all of the changes happening in downtown Gary, the demolition work, and it's all planning, I guess, for some economic development. Tell us about that.
Yes. The Gary Housing Authority, there have been, they've been tearing down a huge amount of 14 different buildings between the 500 and 700 blocks of Broadway downtown. Significant. There's been an uptick in demolition since Mayor Jerome Prince took office. It's been a priority of his to demolish, you know, some of the older buildings. You've seen quite a few go down on Broadway by the Borman in Glen Park. Like, he tore down that motel in the Hollowed Out Motel on Students Highway. But this was a project that's being pursued by the Gary Housing, and the remnants of the former Memorial Auditorium came down to make for that Broadway Loft project. It's going to be the parking lot for that. But the Gary Housing Authority is tearing down more than a dozen buildings along three blocks, most notably the Felix Flex Maldonado. He had that iconic four-story portrait of the Jackson 5 that had started out at Miller on a fence there that, unfortunately, that's been removed since. That one had badly decayed, though, since it was on a, you know, on a fence, and then this one was a little bit more substantive on concrete. But they're tearing down these buildings, including, you know, anyone who's been in Gary for some time will know, like, all these buildings at the back of their hands, the Minus Furniture Store, the Chop Suey Place. Like, a lot of these are very buildings that have been there for forever. But they're being, you know, most of them were unoccupied. Most of them have been decaying for some time. A lot of them have the roofs collapsed in. They are, and they're being torn down to make way for a potential economic redevelopment project. The Gary Housing Authority is, it had success with the Broadway Loft, where it's going to have a mixed use, you know, family housing with ground floor retail. They're basically trying to do something similar here, although this would be a much bigger, more sweeping project, potentially, with one or more developers over like a three-block period downtown. But they're looking to bring in mixed use with housing and potentially ground floor retail in the hopes of bringing in, you know, like basic services the community needs, like restaurants, pharmacies, dry cleaning, that type of thing. You do have a lot of residents downtown and the Genesis Towers and so forth, and they are underserved. There's not a lot of businesses you can just walk to in the community, which is, you know, and so forth. And then they're hoping to put out a call for developers to bring in, you know, to work on some project. That is a very dramatic change to the landscape downtown, potentially the most dramatic change since the Great Gary Arson of 1997. You haven't seen this many buildings kind of be torn down in one fell swoop. And a lot of them recently had kind of been repurposed as, sort of canvases for public art pieces. You had a lot of pieces from Laura Panchenko's Paint Gary initiative you had a lot of pieces from the Gary Poetry Project that were on these. The Felix Flex Maldonado was the big, at 6th and Broadway was the big mural that everyone is mourning.
Yeah, that was...
Good.
I was going to say, that's probably one of the biggest, most noticeable missing points downtown was the Jackson 5 mural that he put up. And I hope that maybe he'll come back, maybe, or somebody will come back and find another spot that won't likely be torn down, to be sure. So go ahead.
Oh, there was so much outcry on that that they're looking at putting some kind of permanent memorial. Who knows what shape it will take, but it might not be as dramatic as, like, you know, when you pull off the toll road and you see the Jackson 5 looming over everything. But just briefly, it also, the Gary Loves the Arts mural, the Do You Believe in the Magic City mural, the Richard Hatcher mural, they've all come down as part of the, a lot of the public arts that's been, you know, gracing downtown there for the past couple of years is coming down as a result of this project.
Well, Joe, we only have about a couple minutes left here, and I did want you to talk a little bit about one of the stories that which has had not only an effect on everybody, but on you. We understand you mentioned on your social media account that it was a story that affected you personally. It was that, of course, of the passing of Ben Watkins, the young man who made a name for himself and his family members, or at least was going to start up as had a restaurant started in Miller, but Ben Watkins passed away from cancer. Tell us about the situation involving him.
Yes, he's a very well-known fixture in the Miller community. He was he helped his parents run Ben's Bodacious Barbecue restaurant, where he did cooking. He was pretty well known for he cooked barbecue, he cooked cinnamon rolls. He was a very a precocious and vivacious kid. He worked the counter. He was often praised for his professionalism and everything, and his love for cooking got him landed him a role on MasterChef Junior with Gordon Ramsay. He was a competitor on there in season 6. He was kind of a fan favorite because he had a winsome personality. But this kid has been through, this kid has suffered more in 14 years than most people suffer in a lifetime. It's just really sad and unfortunate of everything he went through. He lost his mother and father in a murder-suicide and a domestic act of domestic violence. And he ended up going, they both died on a Saturday. He ended up going back to school on a Monday. And then he had been living with his aunt and his grandmother, but his maternal grandmother. But then he has been struggling with an extremely rare form of cancer over the past year and a half, angiomatoid fibrous correctly. But he has extremely aggressive tumors that were afflicting his spine, shoulder, and lung. He had tumors the size of a softball. That had to be cut out of him. He had been undergoing chemotherapy at the Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. They're trying to get the tumors down to a manageable size to where he could be treated with further surgeries. But unfortunately, he passed away on Monday. There was an outpouring of support. It got international media coverage because of his, he was well known for being on the network TV show, but it was, he was beloved, locally and all over the world. And hopefully he's at peace now. The statement from his parent or from his, the Edwards family kind of says it all, where it's, Ben suffered more than his share in his 14 years on this earth, and he takes all us, and that his suffering is finally over. And that in the end, he knew he was loved by so many.
Well, Joe, we'll just have to end this on the sad note, but we know that there'll be other great stories that you'll have for us, and that we'll be on a more upbeat basis, even though we still are dealing with the pandemic, and we certainly appreciate you spending time with us today to bring us up to date on the stories. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Joseph Pietz, a business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us, and our thanks to Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson for her conversation with Crown Point Mayor David Uran, as well as to Post Tribune reporter Hannah Reed and to Times Business reporter Joseph Pete for the stories they had in print and online this week. And thanks. We'll be back with you on Monday.